Welcome to the Open to Hope Show. I'm your host, Dr. Heidi Horsley, and I'm here today with my co-host and my mom, Dr. Gloria Horsley. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Heidi. Oh, my gosh, we just saw you over the new year. I mean, over Christmas, it was fabulous.
Absolutely, and today I'm here in the New York City studio, and you're in California.
I'm back in California. Yeah, fantastic. Well, we're going to be talking a little bit with people about the new year and how to cope, especially for you folks who have lost loved ones and had to cope with the holiday season. And, you know, coming into the new year, it can be a little bit, let's be positive. Let's be upbeat. It can be a time of new positive things, new ideas that you can make for yourself. I hesitate to say New Year's resolutions because they sound pretty heavy to me. Maybe New Year's ideas, New Year's tips, or whatever. Right, Hyde?
Absolutely. Like you said, it can either be a time, depending on where people are in their journey, where they're saying, okay, you know what? I'm ready to make a shift. I'm ready to kind of figure out how to be a little bit more open to hope this year. And even if you're early on in the journey, you can still play around with the idea that maybe you can be open in some way to hope, which is why we're called Open to Hope.
Absolutely. Well, we've got a great guest today because I know she has been widowed, but she's been a mentor to so many people. And coming into the new year, I know she's going to have some mentoring ideas for you, right, Heidi?
Yes, she is. She will have some ideas of how to shift your energy, how to start feeling better, and how to begin to heal, and if you already are on that healing journey, how to even find more areas of light in your life.
Absolutely.
So her name is Dr. Joanne Moore. And Dr. Joanne Moore, after she was widowed, she was inspired to start a magazine, Mom, called Pathfinder, a companion guide for the widower's journey. And she also wrote a book called After the Loss of a Spouse, What's Next? Welcome to the show, Joanne.
Thank you, Heidi. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to
January,
have you on.
January is a difficult time of year for a lot of people, and it's just great to stop and think about what makes it difficult, and maybe by figuring that out, we can find some strategies to deal with it.
Now, I know you've been a physical therapist. Are you still doing that?
I am a full-time physical therapist in Connecticut. And in that capacity, I feel like I've been doing that for 42 years, and I feel that I get to journey with people through difficult stages of their life. Mm-hmm. And loss is loss, whether you've lost your leg or you've lost your capacity to play a sport that you loved, or whether you're watching your spouse go downhill and you're losing them gradually. And
yeah, I know your husband, you had to be a caregiver and take care of him. And, you know, that's one of the things that I think of, particularly people that are in the physical therapy business or nurses or stuff. They're noted for not being great grievers because they've been used to taking care of other people, and now all of a sudden here they are maybe needing some support, and it's kind of hard to accept it sometimes, isn't it?
Yes. I was back at work 2 weeks after my husband died, and I watched how different people grieved over the years, and I knew which people I admired and how I wanted to do it and how I didn't. So I got right back into the game. I think, for me, one of the best strategies is to care about other people, and that helps me get out of myself a little bit. So I use that strategy.
So, Joanne, being of service and serving others seems like it helped you to start to heal.
It helped me tremendously. Mm-hmm. It keeps things in perspective. It helps me count the blessings that I still have. And it helps me to recognize my strengths that I still have. Plus, it gives me a social structure. It gives me a place to go, a place where I'm accepted and I have a role.
A place where you feel more competent, it sounds like, kind of. Because, you know, after a loss, you feel victimized. You feel like something's been done. It's very disempowering to
have
somebody die.
You need to have control over something.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit about your own journey. I mean, your husband died.
Okay. He had been sick for about 7 years. He had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and then he developed Parkinson's disease, and then he finally contracted mesothelioma, and he died of mesothelioma After about seven years of illness altogether.
Okay, so he had 7 years of illness, and then at the end he had something called mesothelioma. That's a cancer? No.
It's a cancer of the pleura around the heart.
Okay.
It's due to asbestos exposure.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, what surprised you? Were you surprised after he died at some of your responses?
I was surprised at my capacity to carry on.
Mm.
That I could function pretty well during the day, that most of my problem came during the night. It was really hard to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It was just hard to care about things like flossing your teeth or, you know, things that you would normally never skip doing.
I'm smiling at the flossing teeth thing because sometimes my mother will say, and I always thought it was corny until you just said that, you know, if you just floss one tooth, set that goal. And I always thought that was a weird goal, but I realize now, talking to you and her, that flossing your teeth after my brother died and after your husband died it's a big deal. It can be feel like a big thing.
Right. When you're not doing those things, you know you have a problem.
Right, right.
Right. The minimal. Yeah. Well, talk about cooking and eating alone. I know a lot of women say that's that's a toughie.
Well, the women have a little bit of a problem with it, but men have a bigger problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that too many men remarry too quickly after the loss of their wife because they don't know how to cook.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I was speaking with Jacques Pepin, and he is a fabulous chef. And he admitted that when he's alone, he even eats out of the pot at the stove.
Mm.
And so there's no shame in that. And he gave us some really great tips about shopping for dinner right in the grocery store, right in the deli department. Pick up your salad, your deviled eggs, go over to the deli and get them to throw some turkey on your meal. And also to do your socializing right there in the vegetable department of the grocery store so that you have a little socialization with your dinner. You don't need to be a fancy cook, but I'm a big believer in good nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you can't do well and think clearly unless you're getting some good nutrition.
Mm-hmm. That's a great thought of thinking clearly.
Yeah.
Well, I know you say widowhood is a taboo topic. Talk about that.
Boy, it really is. It's the last taboo that we have in this country. You can talk about just about anything else, but people do not want to hear about your grieving. And even when I was trying to sell magazine subscriptions, they'll say, oh, no, I don't need it, or I'm okay, I don't need it, or else, well, my neighbor needs it, but I'm not going to give it to her because she might, you know, I might remind her that her husband died.
Wow.
You know, you don't forget that someone died. So,
right.
A lot of the writing that I've done, especially in the book, After the Loss of a Spouse, What's Next, it gives people some framework to talk about the subject with their friends and their family members. A typical widow loses 75% of her friends in the first year.
That's amazing. And are most of those friends married?
Yes.
So maybe they see you as, I don't know, widowed women
as
threats.
They're just uncomfortable.
Or they're single all of a sudden. What do you think that's all about?
Well, some people are just natural attrition things. You know, if your husband's worked together, they're not going to make plans at work anymore to get together over the weekend. Other people are just really uncomfortable, and they don't know how to handle it. I remember going out to dinner with three other couples. We were really good friends. And at a restaurant, a table is set for eight. And we sat there with that empty place all evening, just paralyzed by it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned that night that it's up to me to make my friends feel comfortable and to tell them how to handle me. And so the next time I arrived first at the restaurant, I said, there's only going to be seven of us, remove that place, and so that we didn't ever look again at another empty place setting at a table. But that was so uncomfortable. And we all felt awkward, but you need to take charge and tell people how to treat you, what you need.
Yeah, so you need to teach, we always are saying this on the show, you need to teach people how to be good grief support because they're not psychic.
they don't know what you want today, mm-hmm. and it might not be what you wanted yesterday.
Well, that's a good point, Joanne. So our needs change day to day or hour to hour, depending on where we are in our grief journey.
Yes, so get very good at telling people what you need, because they really do want to help, and they don't have any idea how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what about the fact that guys maybe are overwhelmed by two women going to dinner with them? You know, your husband.
Yeah, that too. And I asked a couple friend of mine, because they always pick up the tab, too.
Mm.
And that made me feel awkward, because I didn't want them to have to pay for my dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked them, what's the protocol here? I have two friends, a couple, married couple, and they're really quite socially adept. So I said, what's my role here at this dinner table? And they said, well, to entertain us, because we're tired of each other's stories. We want to hear your stories.
That's good. I like that, Joanne.
Yeah.
I had one lady tell me that she said, oh, I have a great social life. And I said, really? And she said, yeah, because I do parties. Mm. I invite people over to my house.
I like
that
idea,
Mom. That's
a
great strategy. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a great strategy. And then people feel comfortable inviting you over as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, talk about starting your magazine. How did that happen? And how far along were you in your widowhood before you did that?
Yeah, it was probably after about 5 years that I realized that I wasn't the first person that this happened to, but I didn't really have a great role model. My parents were married 71 years. My dad just died recently.
That's amazing.
And so my parents were still married when I lost my spouse, and I've been awfully lucky, right, to not have too much experience with this. But I realized that it was hard to find a role model, that too many of the widows I knew just sat in the back pews of the church and didn't talk too much. And I really needed a role model. And I found that Jackie Kennedy was my best role model. I was 12 when the president was shot, and so I watched her on television every day. And so the dignity with which she carried herself inspired me to want to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read a biography of Katharine Graham. She was the publisher of the Washington Post.
Yeah, I read that biography. Right. It was fabulous.
And she inspired me tremendously as well. But I wanted more people to know about these role models. And so the magazine got started, and we talked about a woman who lost everything she had gambling, right down to her house and her jewelry, and other women who went on to do great things, and men who went on to do great things. So we can learn so much from each other's stories, and I wanted to tell those stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
I love
what
it. And people can write for your magazine, right?
Yes. Right now it's just a digital magazine, so it's at pathfindermag.com, and it's free online. People can read, and if people have stories they'd like to submit, we'd be happy to look at them as well. And we have the book out, After the Loss of a Spouse, What's Next? And there's a chapter in there on goal setting, which is just great for the first of the year, for January, how to set goals for yourself. And I think that we should have goals, personal, professional, and financial.
Oh, I like that.
In each category. And so how to do it, how to write down your personal goal, for example, might be to learn to play the piano. And so you would write down everything that you would need to get this started. You would either need to buy or rent a piano or an electric keyboard. You'd need to find a teacher. You'd need to find a place to practice and a time to practice. And you'd have to
My father-in-law just bought one of those little keyboards that you can just do, you know. You don't have to be a pianist, and he loved it.
You can have so much fun with that.
And
or
it's,
maybe
and
you want to learn
creative
to speak
outlet.
Spanish.
It's a creative outlet to grieving when you think of music.
The creative outlet is absolutely key in the grieving process, whatever your creative outlet is, because it's not about the art or the music or the writing, but doing those activities makes you think creatively. And when you start to think creatively, it permeates your whole life, and you start to see the opportunities that are there for you. Yes, one door closed.
And I like the financial goals, because what we've found in interviewing widows is that oftentimes, especially if they've been married a very long time, their role in their jobs and their family weren't financial. Oftentimes, their husband would deal with the finances. So it was a learning curve once he died.
Yeah, and it's so important. You need to understand so that you don't spend more than you make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that permeates where you're going to live. Maybe you're not going to be able to afford keeping that big house. I have a friend who had a big, beautiful home with her husband, and when he passed, she couldn't continue to afford it.
Mm-hmm.
So she moved into the garage apartment, and she rents out the house
mm-hmm.
for events.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that way she's able to keep her home and make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So there's all sorts of creative things you can do.
And then you had a third point, right? Was that right?
Personal,
right.
Financial, and professional goals. Mm-hmm. And professional, depending on your age and stage, can be either paid work or volunteer work. But I think work gives us purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it gets us up.
It does.
And it doesn't matter how old you are. I mean, you can start something new.
Exactly.
If you're a writer, you can try to do something for Pathfinders magazine. You can blog.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are so many things you can do now.
Yep.
There really are, Mom. And, you know, a lot of the people that I work with in my private practice say the worst days of the week are the days that they don't have a reason to get up in the morning, like Saturday and Sunday. I mean, they said that's when they really feel depressed. When they have to get up and get out of the house and go to work and do these things, it kind of is distracting in a positive way.
Absolutely. And I don't want it to just be busy work.
Mm-hmm.
I really want it to bring you meaning and joy.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, we can all just work in a factory on an assembly line, but that's not what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every coin has two sides, and we had a disappointment. We lost all of our plans and dreams for the future with this person, but that doesn't mean that there is no future. And I believe to my core that every stage of life has value and meaning, and we have the right and the responsibility to live it to the best that we can.
I like that, Joanne. So if there's someone out there that has recently lost their spouse and they're trying to find hope and they're not in a good place right now, what kind of advice would you give them?
I want them to try to find a creative outlet of some sort, and it either art or music or writing or photography, because it's going to open their mind to seeing the opportunities that lie ahead.
Mm.
I think that being open-minded, grieving can turn to pouting if you're not open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
We're always going to grieve the loss of that person. There's no doubt about it. But that doesn't mean that there's not more.
I like that.
And I like that you're a physical therapist and doing that. What's your physical advice for people if they're really feeling down?
Well, do the best you can to exercise and get fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh air is really, really important. If all you can do is go out and sit on the porch, go out and sit on the porch. If you can walk down the street and back, that's good too. Do what you can. Since I love exercise. It makes me feel good. It gets my endorphins going. And I joined a hiking group, the Appalachian Mountain Club.
Oh, I love that.
I've hiked the peak of all the New England states since my husband died.
Wow.
And that's over the age of 60.
That's wonderful.
And so I'm a big believer in physical fitness. So you're not going to be able to do too much in the beginning. The body just doesn't go. But there was one day, about a year after Joe died, probably, that I noticed that there was a spring in my step. And I said, now what am I supposed to do with a spring in my step? And that's kind of when I felt the real me coming back to the surface, that I was back and I had some energy, and I had to figure out then what to do with it. But there was a switch that just turned on that day.
Now, how long was that for you about?
That was probably about a year after.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I had started exercising about 6 months after.
Mm-hmm.
I had to push through 6 months of exercise before it started to come more easily.
Mm-hmm.
I love that push through, yeah. Did you ever feel like you didn't deserve to exercise, or like people wouldn't think that you really cared if you exercised?
That I didn't deserve to exercise?
Yeah, sometimes I remember early on I thought people would look at me and think I didn't care because I was out running.
Oh, no, I think laughing. I felt that way with laughing. If people saw me in a restaurant laughing, I thought that that might be guilt-inducing. But, no, exercise, I think people think is a pretty healthy outlet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's better than going to a bar.
That's a whole other show, isn't it?
Absolutely.
About drinking or taking drugs, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, we're going to close on that note. So, Dr. Joanne Moore, thank you so much for coming on the show today and for talking about moving into the new year and what we can do to move into the new year.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been great having you on. Well, Heidi, such important ideas and thoughts, aren't they, for getting everyone going? And I loved what she said. You know, if all you can do right now is sit outside. And I think it's important to realize that she started to get a spring in her step after a year. So, you know, don't get discouraged. Try to hang in this year and give yourself permission to take care of yourself and watch what you can do this year.
Absolutely. It is so important, Mom. Just little tiny steps, one step at a time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Heidi and I hope that you'll tell all of your friends and family about Open to Hope and about this show, because we count on you to be the ones that spread the word that there is hope and happiness after a loss. And Heidi and I always want to remind you that if you've lost hope, please lean on ours until you find your own, and God bless.
You've been listening to Open to Hope Radio, hosted by Drs. Gloria and Heidi Horsley. Like today's edition, all of our past programs are available on demand at opentohope.com, along with helpful articles, videos, resources, and links to help get you through the toughest time of your life. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter and sign up for our monthly newsletter. Again, that's opentohope.com. Check it out today. Then be sure to stop by next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time when we'll be posting another edition of Open to Hope Radio. Remember, others have been where you are. They made it through, and you can too, as long as you're open to hope.